The Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew, the 25th chapter. Jesus said to the disciples, "For it is as if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded them, made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of the slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, 'Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, 'Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made you 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' Then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, 'Master, I knew that you are a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours.' But his master replied, 'You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to those who have, more will be given. They will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." The Gospel of the Lord. In 1863, with the country torn apart by the Civil War, Sarah Hale's campaign to make Thanksgiving a national holiday finally caught people's attention. By the way, she was the famous author of the nursery rhyme, "Mary Had a Little Lamb," which has nothing to do with anything, but I think that's kind of interesting. Hale wrote an editorial to President Abraham Lincoln, urging him to make Thanksgiving Day a permanent national holiday. She prevailed. It was fixed on the 4th Thursday of November until 1939, when President Roosevelt was pressured by store owners to move it to the 3rd Thursday of November so they could have more shopping days between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Side note, commercialism is not a new thing. By now, most people are aware that the popular narrative many of us were raised with regarding Thanksgiving cannot be further from the truth. While occasional peaceful gatherings between pilgrim settlers and native tribes did occur, most pilgrim Thanksgivings were actually feasts or fasts held in celebration of indigenous massacres. For example, in 1637, the governor of the Massachusetts colony declared a day of Thanksgiving after volunteers murdered over 700 Pequot people. Ironically, this incident is often also cited as the first official mention of a Thanksgiving, and is another commonly cited origin story for the Thanksgiving narrative we know today. In truth, Thanksgiving was created to distract a war-torn country, to unify it by calling it back to a memory that never truly existed. There was never a chapter in white colonialism that unilaterally resulted in common meals, reciprocated agricultural knowledge, or shared resources, as the popular Thanksgiving narrative would lead us to believe. What colonialism actually resulted in was land occupation, plunder, rape, genocide, disease, and religious oppression. But that truth lies hidden behind the happy pilgrim, happy Indian, false Thanksgiving narrative. As a result, many of us were raised in schools where we colored pictures of happy pilgrims and happy Indians sitting down to eat together. When I was in elementary school, we divided the class in half, half dressed up as Indians, the other half dressed up as pilgrims, and we sat down and ate cornbread with butter and honey. This Thanksgiving narrative is an attempt, and a very, very powerful one at that, to whitewash the historical truth that white colonists came to this country and stole lands and wiped out entire nations of people. The holiday was created at a time when our warring country needed to be unified, even at the cost of hiding the truth. Hear me clearly. Thanksgiving is my absolute favorite holiday, always has been. There are no presents to buy. There are no church obligations. It's a cozy day to cook and rest. I love it. But it cannot continue to be based on lies if we know the truth, right? I appreciate Marissa calling our congregation to the webinar a few weeks ago hosted by Vance Black Fox, who is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation and also the ELCA Director for Indigenous Ministries and Tribal Relations. In his webinar, Vance exposed many lies and also offered many truths regarding the relationship between Indigenous nations and the Christianity that Europeans brought with them. He named 9 things in particular, and I will mention them to you now. First, regarding creation. Each Indigenous tribe knows exactly where it was created, he said, and we are able to hold many creation stories together at the same time. Christians only have 2 creation stories in the book of Genesis, and would rather ignore one or the other than even try to hold the 2 together. You claim creation happened in the Garden of Eden, but you don't even know where that is. Is it so impossible to think that creation was also happening in other places? Regarding time. Time is not flat like the face of a clock. Rather, it's a spiral that goes up and down and left to right, which means when an event is called to mind or remembered, it happens over and over again. When I recall a story, I pull it through time and it happens again. When I recall a person, I pull them through time and they live again. Regarding place. Nations and tribes had relationships and ceremonies based on specific places, honoring specific trees and animals and rivers and mountains. We ceremonially honored these things, not because of what they gave us, but because they existed. When we were moved from our lands, we lost our ceremonies because the 2 were tied together. A Christian church can be built anywhere, but our ceremonies are intimately connected with place. Regarding non-human relatives, Christians believe we are here to dominate animals and plants, but we believe that we are the lowest on the food chain because nothing on this planet depends upon us. If we were to disappear tomorrow, the earth would not grieve. It does not take Mother Earth much time to heal, as we saw during COVID. We honor our non-human relatives, like plants and animals and rivers and mountains, because we know we are the least powerful of all. Regarding Christianity, natives were forced to convert, either to access food or medication. We do not see the cross as a symbol of life at all. We see it as a symbol of death, because when it arrived, our people died. The church stole our children and forced them into boarding schools where they received white identities that forever estranged them from their families. Our people were punished by threat of death for practicing Native rituals. All of this in the name of Christ. Regarding sin, the idea of original sin makes absolutely no sense to us. This idea did not exist until Europeans arrived. We were already living in the way of Christ before we even knew Christ. We were already living in grace before we even knew that word. Regarding remembering, before the European patriarchal system was imposed upon us, most tribal groups were matriarchal. European worldviews have forced a patriarchal structure upon us that is not natural to our worldview. Up until about 150 years ago, women owned the property and made decisions and organized camps. Men were away hunting and understood when they were absent, the camps had to exist peacefully and efficiently, so decisions were made by women. Any hunting and war decisions made by men had to be ratified by the women. Menstruating women were removed from the camp in order to be tended to and cared for because their power was seen as so great they would actually upset the tribal balance during menstruation or post-childbirth. Women possess knowledge men can never comprehend. Earth is a mother, the ultimate life giver, and all women are her daughters. Also, and this one's kind of funny, only women could divorce, ritualized simply by the woman placing her husband's shoes outside the door. The church upended that balance and enforced male dominance as heads of households, which was foreign to us. Regarding gender, we have always understood more than two genders. Binary for us is not a thing. Some tribes hold up to eight genders. We had male-bodied females and female-bodied males and all kinds of nuances in between. Our term for third gender people was two-spirit people. Our nations became closeted as a result of European colonization and Christian ethics, and countless people took their lives because of it. Finally, regarding spirituality. This word cannot be practiced. There is no such thing as Native American spirituality. Spirituality is embodied. It is just what you are. We don't need the Christian faith. Our Creator is already in, with, and around us. There is no need for a faith that is out there to be baptized into or to accept into my heart. It's already there. Why would we not believe who created us? Concepts of faith and concepts of spirituality mean nothing to us. To live is to be spiritual. We live and breathe and eat and sleep spirituality. Both Vance Black Fox and the Nations at the Truthsgiving event at the Englert last week challenge us to not base Thanksgiving on lies, but rather on truths. Both said, be thankful. Do celebrate. Give the Creator thanks for family and friends and health. But do not base Thanksgiving on truths that never existed. Instead, redefine it. Transform it from the lies you were told to the truths you now know. It is difficult to demythologize holidays and concepts, but it is necessary. In this respect, for example, the idea of MAGA never existed. To make the claim that we need to make America great again means to again push black people to the back of the bus and again push gay people back into the closet. It means to relegate women back to the kitchen, poor people back to the ghettos. Like Thanksgiving, MAGA romanticizes and sentimentalizes a truth that never existed. An America that was never great for everybody, and even if it was in fact great, it was great for only a small group of wealthy and powerful white people. MAGA is every bit as much a myth as Thanksgiving, but we are smarter than that. Christians cannot structure our faith or our lives on lies, because we know a greater truth. The challenge in this is that we cannot mistake human institutions for divine. We can't take Thanksgiving, manifest destiny, the doctrine of discovery, MAGA, or even the Third Reich, for that matter, and say that these things are God's will. These things are human creations, all of which justify death and destruction under the guise of God's plan. Here's the test. If something that is claimed to be love or faith results in another person's death or wish for death, then it is not faith, and it is not love, and it is not of God. We are called to be people of God who strive to redefine and transform such lies into truth. Even within the church itself, there are words that need redefining and transformation. Grace, for example, justice. Even the word Christianity itself. Just a few weeks ago, we celebrated Reformation, when Martin Luther did exactly that. He redefined and transformed the understanding of the word grace from something that is purchased and earned to something that is a free gift for all people. Regarding the word justice, the church's ongoing work is to redefine and transform justice from something that only benefits rich white people to people of color, women, the LGBTQIA community, indigenous people, poor people, immigrants, victims of hate crimes. Even the word Christianity itself demands redefinition and transformation. Will we allow it to be hijacked by the evangelical right in order to justify homophobia or Islamophobia or anti-Semitism or racism or misogyny? The word Christianity must be redefined from that which much of the world sees to that which Christ intends, a kingdom where all are truly welcome, where banquet tables truly exist, where enemies really dine together, where the lion and the lamb really lie down together, where a child leads all nations, where justice benefits everyone, where grace rains down on all people. These are the truths of the Christian faith, that grace and justice and Christ are for all people, not just some. Anything else is a lie. We are not a nation officially caught in a civil war, although it seems more and more like we are just that. Things are certainly a mess right now. The Hamas-Israeli war, it's horrifying. We all read about it every day. The ongoing Russian-Ukrainian war is horrifying. The health of our planet is horrifying. The bizarre science fictional rising threat of artificial intelligence is horrifying. The deafening saber rattling of masters of nuclear war across the globe, horrifying. The stranglehold on public education is horrifying. Our country's level of homelessness and food insecurity is horrifying. The potential outcome of next year's presidential election, horrifying. These things are simple realities. This is the world in which we live. So what narrative can possibly pull all of this together? Will it be one of falsehoods or one of truth? A web of lies and deception, or a net of hope and life? Our reading from Zephaniah, the first reading this morning, sounds much the same as our world today, with images of destruction and plundering and cities being laid waste, houses with no one left to inhabit them, vineyards groaning with fruit with no one around to harvest, days of wrath and anguish and distress, days of ruin, devastation, dark gloom. These don't sound at all like words we want to hear right before Thanksgiving. But yet, even in the book of Zephaniah, with its apparent hopelessness and despair, the entire book ends with song, with singing. A renewed Jerusalem is called to rejoice over the removal of fear and disaster and oppression. Anguish transforms to joy, and destruction transforms to restoration. Economic inequalities are made equal, social imbalances are balanced, and God is ever at work redefining and transforming. That's the narrative we live by. It's the only truth that pulls all things together. And the way this narrative becomes reality is for us to do something. God has given us the tools to build a world that is restored and rehabilitated, redefined, and transformed. Through us, God's kingdom comes. It's what the entire book of Matthew is all about. Using parables and stories, Jesus uses words like brushstrokes to paint a picture of the kingdom of God, where all things are redefined and transformed. A brushstroke here, and the meek are made strong. A brushstroke there, and the lowly are lifted up. A brushstroke there, and the powerful are brought down. The parables of Jesus call us to do something, to transform earthly kingdom lives into God and God's kingdom of truth. Black people are dangerous. Lie. Native Americans are savages. Lie. Women are weak. Lie. Gay people are perverse. Lie. Poor people are lazy. Lie. Jesus calls, in fact demands, that we use our gifts and talents to embody kingdom truths like righteousness and empathy, forgiveness and mercy, in order to redefine and transform present-day lies into God's truth. Do not lose hope or courage. God is at work redefining and transforming each one of us every single day, ever creating us to be God's instruments in this world, to be little Christs to each other, as Martin Luther said. God is ever at work redefining and transforming lies and falsehoods that many of us have based our lives on, not only regarding holidays and politics, but lies about who you are as a person. As a child of God. The lie many people believe is that God could never love you. The redefined and transformed truth is that there's nothing you can do ever that will separate you from God's love. What holy and sacred work to redefine and transform the ugliness around us into a thing of beauty. To comfort those who grieve, to clothe people who are cold, to feed bellies that are empty, to work for peace, to speak words of love, to work for reparations and reconciliation with those that we've harmed, to do all of these things in the name of a God who loves all people. Thanksgiving is not about thanking God for the things that we have, which implies that God somehow blesses some and not others. Instead, it's about worshiping God for the unconditional love that God has for all people. And in this way, all people are blessed. In this way, all people receive grace upon grace. In this way, all people have a place at the table. And for this, we give thanks. Amen.